Hi everybody, and in this session we have Matthias Gelber, who in 2009 was voted the greenest man on the planet, been a very good friend of mine for going on 20 years, longer than we both probably care to remember, and somebody who's not an activist in the sense of the word of being dramatic, but who has been an educationalist and an ambassador for the planet since, well, probably since he was a very, very young boy. Hi, Matthias. How are you doing?
Hi, Mike. Good to catch up with you. Yeah, I'm doing great despite all the challenges that we are facing. But yeah, I'm still in positive spirits.
And you're in the Philippines at the moment, which is such a fantastic country. And let me just ask you before we get into you, what's the feeling on and the positivity about the future in the Philippines?
I would say that here in the Philippines, I think there will be a refocus on what is really essential. And I think people are realizing, and we see that in the family, after we did an eco-friendly christening party with my family for the first time, grandma started to plant trees, because part of the christening party was we planted 30 fruit trees. Wow. To make the event climate neutral. And you know, interesting is grandma and grandpa have a lot of land at their disposal, but they never really planted anything. And since then, we have supported them as well to start planting, and now they're sitting there on the land having a good time, and they are able to harvest quite a lot of the stuff that they started planting in the last 2 years. So this idea of back to basics, self-sufficiency, lifting up the recognition and the importance of farming as an essential local way of supporting the community, I think there will be a going back to some of the things that they did well in the past, but it's been, you know, too industrialized, or farmers are earning too little money. So I think this will be a learning point for people to go back to some of the basics, to look at how they can achieve self-sufficiency rather than relying on the systems, the industrial systems that we have created around our lives. So that's where I can see a positive impact for the future. I think as well that the Philippines people will come together in terms of supporting one another, because there's a lot of poverty in the country. And now income sources of a lot of people have completely broken down, or most people. So only through collaborating, through supporting one another, people will be able to survive this. Not everybody gets support from the government, even though in theory that should be. But there are a lot of people that live in squatters here. They are not even registered officially. So there is no official record there's no official support mechanism for these people. We have even seen that here, not far away from where we live. So only through people working together, this crisis can be overcome. And hopefully that will make a lot of people rethink away from consumerism as the ultimate way of finding satisfaction, recognition, or happiness, and the realization that that is actually not really what counts. And now you cannot even exercise that. You are not able to spoil yourself in short-lived consumerism. And I think this will as well be one of the main realizations and rethinkings of society, that less might be more.
Yeah, you've triggered so many thoughts in me here and so many questions I want to ask you already. But let's go back to the start for the people who are hearing your voice for the first time. And tell us about your childhood, where you grew up, and when you first started getting into the environment, and you know, maybe what your dad said to you at you know, when you said you were going to be an environmental person, and then sort of a little bit about your journey to get where you are, and then I'm going to dig into some key questions for you.
Yeah, I grew up in a small village in Germany, 500 inhabitants, surrounded by the forest. There was a forest cover of more than, or there still is a forest cover of more than 60% in my village area where I live. The forest is owned by the community, not by individuals. It's managed and run by the community. And there is a sustainable harvesting system in place that's been there for generations. And different families in the village all have a certain share in that. So I could see with my own eyes how you can actually get something from the output of nature. And the forest was my playground. I was out there all the time. We as kids, we were playing in the forest. The forest was just next to our village. I mean, it was literally a 2-minute walk, and we're in the forest on different ends of the village. And there was even one forest that was a round area that we were always meeting in and playing in. And when I was a teenager and my late dad asked me, hey son, what way do you want to earn money in the future? What job you want to get? I told him that my role is to save the planet. And he looked at me with an empty look, kind of shocked, and said, son, you can't make a living, you can't earn money from hugging trees. Yeah. And, you know, he was a straightforward guy. His profession was a bricklayer on construction sites. And he was like, what are you doing, son? Your age, I was already earning money. Get a proper job. You can't make a living from, you know, saving the planet. So this was something that he struggled with seeing as a mission that I already saw at that point in time. And this was as well a time when Chernobyl blew up, and that was the first time ever we weren't allowed to eat the fruits from our own garden in the backyard. Every year we as well planted potatoes in a huge potato field. We weren't really farmers, but everybody in the village had their own, you know, little field of potatoes, and
yeah,
you know, had some. Yeah, so there was a largely self-sufficiency on the food side in my village, without doing large-scale farming output. And I was just very comfortable with nature, with the natural elements, enjoying out there, and this connectivity with nature, I think, brought me to this path. I mean, Rachel Carson's book, Silent Spring, came out as well at that time. And there was this realization, hey, the industrialized economy is pouring out a lot of toxic stuff that's actually not just polluting the planet. It's partially impacting the health of humans. It might be even killing humans in certain ways. I mean, mercury or other toxic chemicals that are going out there into the environment through industrialized activities. So I decided, let's study chemistry so I know more where this pollution comes from and how I can help stop this pollution to have that negative impact on the planet. So that was my starting point. I studied a bit of chemistry, then I did a master in environmental science with management and legislation. I realized, hey, this is fun to work with businesses on helping businesses to improve how they tackle the environment. So from, you know, a little bit of an environmental activist in my teenage years, I then moved into becoming a trainer and a consultant. People enjoyed my talks, my training. They said, hey, you're not really a boring engineering kind of guy. You're telling interesting stories and you're focusing on how we can make this work. So quite quickly, I became well known in this field as an expert on environmental management systems for business. I started traveling around the world, and then my business that I co-founded with another guy in the UK became very successful. We were acquired by a listed engineering company on an earnout deal. And then after we both served our 3 years of contracted time with the new company, we both decided to take it easy for a while. He bought a farm in Scotland. I moved to Malaysia. So that's the story.
And when you got to Malaysia, because I wanted to ask about that, so I'm glad you sort of segued there. What did you experience, firstly, in terms of the way, say, the continent of Asia deals with environmental issues as to the continent of Europe? dealing with environmental issues, were they the same, dramatically different, or how did it look to you back then?
I mean, one thing that became obvious was that the environmental movement was there already, but it wasn't as strong and as impactful as it has been in Europe. It was not a priority on most people's mind. Priority was really survival, making money, earning a living. And there is a considerable amount of good legislation in this part of the world. But often there is a huge gap between what legislation says should be done and the actual enforcement of legislation, or people finding ways of getting around the legislation through connections, through under the table money. So I realized that there is even much more of a challenge here in Southeast Asia than in Europe to make these things happen. And companies were only slowly starting to take these things serious, because you always had to convince companies there's money in it for them. So in Europe, companies would do it, at least in Germany, there was very much of a long-term thinking. There were some pioneering companies that saw this as a responsibility towards the planet, towards God's creation, towards the local community. Those were actually the pioneers of proactive environmental management in Germany, medium-sized companies strongly rooted with the local community. And I couldn't see many of those companies in Southeast Asia. And it was always, you know, the argument that you had to come up with, oh, get energy efficient, go green, and you can save money by reducing your electricity bill. Or there is a green product opportunity here, expand in that, and you might get additional customers. So that was the important part here in this part of the world, to make it very commercially relevant as an incentive to move. But now we see as well investors. I mean, the latest trend is really for listed companies, ESG funds, environmental social governance. That's where huge amounts of money are flowing into. And BlackRock, I think, announced in December they will exit oil and gas. They will use climate change criteria and ESG criteria to analyze listed companies and which companies they want to put their money in, seeing those criteria as a proxy for good governance and as well for risk avoidance, so that the value of their investment is protected as much as possible through applying those ESG criteria. So that is one of the major recent trends, at least for listed companies. And for non-listed companies, we're all supposed to be contributing to the UN Sustainable Development Goals. And some of these goals, especially at the bottom of the pyramid, provide good business opportunities in terms of this market that is undervalued, underserved. It's not so busy yet, and this might be a market that you can deliver good social and environmental benefits to the planet, to people, and at the same time, in a scaled up way, make a good business.
So tell me this, I mean, this sounds very promising, but do you really believe, from your perspective and all your years of experience, you know, 30 plus years now, do you really believe that companies, governments, semi-government, NGOs, and I'll wrap them all in that ball, investors, really, really care about the environment? Or is this simply lip service and the current thing that everybody's talking about, so we might as well jump on board and make a few bucks?
There is a lot of parties, especially NGOs, that care about the environment. And I've seen that here in the Philippines, a lot of groundswell NGOs that really do it for the right reasons. But then, you know, the reality of financial issues hits, and then you have to become more commercial to make an organization sustainable. Most of the motivations are not pure humanitarian or environmentalist speaking, as well the current ESG trend. It's a very commercial motivation. But, you know, in order to scale real action and real impact, I think that this motivation can help. There are, I can't remember the exact figure, but there are trillions and trillions of ESG funds now that have already been set up. This stands for environment, social governance, the buzzword. And it is very sector specific as well, how these ESG rating systems are being applied. And it is having a material impact on companies. I was speaking with the investment manager of SM. This is the big company who runs the malls here in the Philippines. Right. And he was telling me, you know, 10 years ago when he was going to one of the main New York-based investment fund meetings, nobody was interested in this. Then 6 or 7 years ago, 1 or 2 out of 10 were starting to ask some questions. Now he says 8 or 9 out of 10 investors he speaks to is asking them about their ESG performance. And this is not just some warm words that companies can come up with. ESG reporting, and in the Philippines, the Securities and Exchange Commission has collaborated with GRI, Global Reporting Initiative, and the Philippine Stock Exchange, and actually come up with guidelines on reporting. The Philippine Stock Exchange is planning to refocus its Bell Awards. This is the biannual award for the leading Filipino companies solely on environment social governance criteria for the future of the Bell Awards. And these are metrics. These are actual quantified data and targets that companies are setting and reporting against on an annual basis. Hilton is a good example as a global company that has set their sustainability and ESG targets based on science. Right. And they have for environmental targets by 2030, this is the deadline for the UN Sustainable Development Goals, they have expressed that all of their different locations have to contribute to an overall reduction of carbon footprint by 63% in terms of CO2 emission per square meter of hotel space. Then they have 50% reduction in water consumption, 50% reduction in waste generation. These are real quantified targets where large companies are driving them down to individual locations, and the managers in these hotels have to report against these targets. So this is becoming real. This is becoming serious. It's not driven by a motivation to save the planet. It's driven by criteria that fund managers are starting to apply to prioritize where they put their money based on the rationale that certain environmental, social, or governance issues, if not managed properly, could become major risks to the shareholder value of listed companies that they invest in.
Matthias, I have to say that this is really good news. I'm a big fan of conscious capitalism, meaning that, you know, I think as souls in this world, we have a journey that we walk during our lifetime, which is a constant seesaw between our spiritual side, which is our purpose, reason for being here, and our alignment with the greater universe, and our material side, which is, you know, everything from, you know, feeling that you've got a nice place to a good life. And it's really lovely when I dug into that to hear you actually really passionately motivated about speaking and about the fact that this is happening. It doesn't matter what the key behind it is. Mm. What matters is that now there does seem to be a shift happening at that level. And let's hope that it happens in more and more countries. Because, I mean, the Philippines is a great example, because for most of the people listening, they wouldn't sort of see it as being the top of the first world countries like a Sweden or a Holland or even a USA. So it's great to hear of the initiatives that's happening at that level, where it's a bit more of a free marketplace as well. I want to shift the question a little bit to, you know, what we've been experiencing around the world in 2020, which is the coronavirus. Mm. And I really want to ask you From your perspective and with your experience, because it's been fascinating for me to see even now as I look out my own window, the weather looks better. There's not as much pollution. You know, we've got dolphins back in the canals of Venice. Birds are coming back. All sorts of things are happening on this planet. I'm interested in your opinion on, do you think that people will see this as a change? Do you think people in their own lives will decide to make changes now that help our Earth? Or do you think that if and when we go back to any aspect of what we would have called normal in 2019, whether things will just deteriorate again? What's your views on this from an environmental perspective?
I mean, it shows the incredible fast healing capacity of the Earth's ecosystem.
Yes.
And it shows as well the gigantic impact that human trade, consumption, and manufacturing and extraction of raw materials and the burning of those raw materials in transportation and industrial processes and the whole industrialized activity has on the planet. So suddenly, the waters, the air, and the land can be seen in a different light, the light of humanity not doing all the things that have such a massive accumulated impact. So this is interesting. It gives hope that things could potentially be turned around quickly. At the same time, it makes us realize that it's our human activity that is the underlying source of these some of these problems. And that means at the same time that now, as a lot of this activity is stopped, there's regeneration going on. But we have created an economic system that requires all of this to happen constantly for our system to function. So it's questioning the whole system, I would say. At the same time, I think the massive, fast, accelerated impact that the virus has had and how fast it can basically stop countries, economies, international air travel has shocked us. But at the same time, it is maybe as well a reminder that there are other risks out there that are accumulating at an extremely slow pace. But once we are beyond the tipping point, they could as well have the same impact like the COVID virus. And that's where I'm referring to climate change. I mean, yep. Most people take climate change easy because there is no gigantic impact yet on people's lives. Even though when we ask a lot of communities, especially those communities that are living, you know, somewhere close to the, I saw the other day a report from the most northern city in Norway, which had huge problems in terms of housing and other impacts. We look at the people who live in the mountains, some ski resorts that can't operate anymore. I look at my little village in Germany where I had snow every winter, 3 months per year. We look at, you know, changing weather patterns, unreliability of weather patterns. I mean, those are some signs that there is a human impact there. Yes, we have had a natural fluctuation as well, but I don't think people can deny that there's climate change going on. Some people obviously have different points of view. What is the root cause of that climate change, whether it's natural or whether it's human induced? But there's definitely climate change happening. And maybe this crisis can be a reminder that we should take preventative action rather than wait for the problems to accumulate.
So what would be three preventative actions that the average person listening to this call could take post-COVID to ensure that they're minimalizing their own footprint on the environment in a negative way. So what would be three positive actions that they could take to minimize their footprint in your view?
Yeah. First of all, look at the materials that you buy and how much of them turn into waste, and whether you can avoid buying new stuff, whether you can reuse old stuff, exchange things with your neighbors. A lot of the clothes that we use for our kids, and even now some of the clothes that I'm starting to use, are not new clothes that we bought. They are reused from other people. So waste minimization by asking yourself the question, do I really need this or can I reuse something else? Number one. Number two, look at your electricity and fuel bill. Electricity in terms of your monthly bill that comes through the post. What can you do about it? I mean, I bought a much more expensive air conditioning system for our home here that is an inverter air conditioning system. And the shop assistant told me, oh, nobody buys these systems because people see them as too expensive. But from my calculation, after less than a year, I've recovered the extra expense of buying it. So look at efficiency, look at how can you change your behavior. Or here in the bedroom, we have an air conditioning system. And when I lived alone, I didn't use air conditioning system hardly ever, even here in this part of the world. But, you know, when you're a family, when you have little kids, you need to make compromises. So, you know, you don't need to be perfect. I'm not perfect. But fine-tune your electricity bill, invest in efficiency, and try and reduce it, because that is equivalent to a carbon footprint at the power plant where the electricity is generated, and most likely it comes from a coal-fired power plant like here in the Philippines, and where you are based in South Africa, most of the electricity comes still from coal-fired power plants. Yes. So, and thirdly, you know, look at whether you can make your life climate neutral. I mean, that's what I've been trying to promote and do. I have planted a lot of trees myself. We are planting trees here in the land that the family owns. I have an investment that is a sustainable forest in Panama. It's already 16 years old. And once it's 20 plus years old, there will be selective harvesting and replanting. There will always be a forest. And it is my carbon sink. So it might as well be carbon credits that you could buy. I believe that we should all take personal responsibility. Okay, there are a lot of people out there that, you know, don't believe in the CO2 aspect of climate change, that say this is a hoax. I personally believe that if we would all focus on climate neutral living, we would solve the problem of rising temperatures and climate change as a threat to human existence on the planet. And this threat should be even more visible in front of our eyes through the impact that this crisis has had. I mean, with climate change, we are talking about, you know, a cycle of 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, depending on how fast it accelerates. But we should take it very, very serious. And we can take personal action to take responsibility for this.
Now, a lot of this and your ideas and a little bit of the story here is in your book. Is that still available?
Yes. The book, for our listeners here, just drop me a message on social media or on my website, greenmanspeaks.com. Or find me Green Man on LinkedIn or on Facebook. Drop me a message and I will send you a free download for my book. I'm happy to share this with you guys. It's basically a guide on green living and working, how we can introduce simple, effective green practices in our homes, in our lives, in our place of work, in our office, or in our business, or how we can even look at starting a new green business that has a healing impact on the planet and makes a good living at the same time. So yeah, I'm happy to share this free of charge with you guys.
Awesome.
As my support for you greening your own life and your work and your business.
Yeah, it's a fantastic book, and it has got just so many really practical things in it as well, plus some really interesting backgrounds on different things. To move on, like as we move into the latter half of 2020 and into 2021, there's going to become a new norm. None of us know, and we can only speculate what that new norm is. But what do you think is going to be some of the things that happen environmentally with the new norm? Like, whilst I'm celebrating the fact that I've got clearer skies and there's more dolphins, I'm also well aware that, you know, we're talking on Zoom, and Zoom has gone in the last 3 weeks from 10 million users to over 100 million users. And so, and that takes power, and we're all on the internet, which is adding more radio waves to the air. So, you know, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So whilst we might be not having heavy industry, we might be doing something on a quantum level that actually has more effect on the planet than even what we were doing before. And then I want to ask you, so I'll prepare you for this question. I want to ask you about what I've seen a lot in the media about recently, and certainly in the conspiracy media of depopulation. But firstly, let's talk about maybe how you see the outcomes for the planet coming out into 2021 and beyond. Any thoughts?
I think that we will question as we go ahead the need for travel. There will be a lot less travel, especially business travel, because suddenly people have become comfortable with communicating online over Zoom or other methods. I've been pushing it recently, and you know, a lot of people have been surprised. Oh, it's really that easy, and it's that effective. So, and I had a friend from Kuantan in Malaysia. My Zoom call with him was the first Zoom call he ever made. And he's been using it left, right, and center now. And he said, I've been, you know, traveling down to KL 2 to 3 days per week. I've wasted a lot of time. I've wasted a lot of resources. So the actual efficiency gain and emission reduction that we will get through teleworking and through online conferences, even massive conference scaled up, where we'll be talking at hundreds and thousands of people, will definitely outweigh the negative impact of the power that we are consuming, because our laptops, our mobile phones are extremely efficient. But flying one time from Southeast Asia to Europe to attend a conference, that is the big environmental impact of, let's say, a return ticket economy flight. We're talking about 5 tons of carbon dioxide, and you won't be able to churn that out through hundreds of conference calls over Zooms. So we will definitely, I think, see a certain reduction of environmental impact through a different way of doing business. And I think it might have as well an impact on real estate prices. I think some people will realize we don't need all of this office space that we are using at this point in time. It's more effective if we equip our employees with a good Wi-Fi connection and extra budget for working partially from home. And why should we, and this is the case here in Metro Manila, waste some employees' hours and social time with their family of up to 4 hours a day traveling to and from work? Let them at least 2 or 3 days per week work from home. So I think there will be a big realization that things can be done in a different way. We've been forced to do that. And I think it will have a positive impact on overall pollution reduction. I think some people will as well realize, oh, what we have imported from China, we haven't been able to get our hands on it from the last 2 or 3 months. I work with a company here in the Philippines. They do indoor air quality. most of their raw materials come from China, even though there was a lot of demand for their coating for offices because it's antibacterial, they were not able to sell it because they didn't have stock and they couldn't get new stock from China. So my suggestion was to them, hey guys, why don't we talk to that one company that I know is producing similar materials here in the Philippines next door to you guys and get them to manufacture it. So there will be a shift, I think, towards local manufacturing, local sourcing to reduce the risk of your business operation. And I believe that that could potentially contribute to reducing the global shipping of products that will, you know, at this point in time, contribute to pollution. So on a business and on a logistical level, I think we will continue some of these trends, and by that have a positive global impact. We will see people ask the question, you know, do I really need to be away from my family for so long? I know that some people might struggle with the quarantine, but I'm enjoying just being here with my family, spending time with them every day, 24 hours. And maybe some people realize that this is actually more important than some other things in life. So hopefully we can reignite a strong family time philosophy for the future as one of the guiding principles. And how that will impact on societies, I'll need to do a little bit more thinking on that.
No, very, very good. I think, you know, I found myself the other day, we live by the beach, but standing on our balcony, not a soul on the beach. Out of our back window, we look at the winelands in Cape Town, not a soul on the roads or the golf courses or anything like that. And found myself saying, it'd be really good if we could have a lockdown every year for about 2 weeks, because I really like this. But but definitely, I think, you know, that's because, you know, you and I both love the people that we're getting to spend time with. And unfortunately, some people are spending time with people that they don't have a relationship with anymore. Mm. And we've got another speaker talking about that during our upcoming summit as well. So I think you've got some good insights, and I definitely agree with you. I think one of the learnings that's here for people that I want to give you while listening to Matthias is about not putting things off. There's so many people I know that have put off traveling. You know, they wanted to go to Italy or to Greece or to Peru or wherever, and they've been putting it off for years. Well, folks, you may not be able to go in future, and you may have to go, if you do want to go, you may have to go very, very differently. You may have to have medicals. You may have to fill in 1,000 forms. You may have to pay extraordinary more money to do the types of travel, because certain countries will be very careful about who comes in and out of those countries. Mm. And I think we've got embracing some of the technologies and things like that is fantastic. Matthias, I did want to talk about overpopulation. I think, you know, from my point of view, and I know you know this, and I've been interested in talking to you this time, how many times you've referred to global warming, and also acknowledging that some people think that, you know, global warming from humanity is not true and all of those sort of things. And there's been a lot of that in recent years. And it's interesting because that's something that I really feel that you're acknowledging. And I definitely have been a person who understands that a lot of the cycles on Earth do change, and the fact that there's no snow in places there used to be snow is partially because of the precessional cycle and other things that just happen in the universe. But I think it's blatantly obvious to me in the last 2 or 3 weeks that the human beings have added dramatic effect in certain places of the planet to global warming and to the environment. I mean, I'd have to be blind not to see that. Probably a lot more effect than I suspected myself. So this brings me to the point of, there's a lot of people out there saying we're literally too overpopulated. It'd be great if coronavirus wipes out a section of the world. And of course, you know, we have the situation where not everybody can work from home because in some lower socioeconomics. They don't have the space. They don't have the Wi-Fi capacity. They don't have the quietness that you and I might enjoy. So I'm interested to see, what do you think will happen on a very macro level because of this scare that's been put into us as a human race right now in 2020? What do you think on a macro level is going to be some of the politics, policies, views from your perspective over the next 5 years? Big question.
Yeah, that's a big question and quite a difficult one, because the impact on human lives at this point in time from a virus that we cannot manage and that we cannot control is extremely tragic and is an impact of a lot of individual stories of sadness, families losing loved ones. And I hope that we can, for that reason, quickly overcome it. Overpopulation is an issue. It's a problem. And I was at an earlier stage in my life thinking that I would never have kids because of the problem of overpopulation. Now I have two kids. It's my responsibility to make sure that they have a healing impact on the planet and they don't become part of the problem. I mean, I will not control their lives. I will try and encourage them to follow in my footsteps from a point of view of going the green and sustainability path. What policies countries will put in place to address this issue, I don't know. And obviously here in the Philippines, the growth of population has been very, very accelerated. And I think in the Philippines, there is the challenge of the Catholic Church in the past having really not been very favorable in the use of contraceptives and other policies. So hopefully this will open up a little bit of opportunities there for the government to be more proactive with some of these things, because you know, we just yesterday had two people turning up that we, Mary Ann is sometimes communicating my wife with people here locally that have some problems. And it was a young girl. I don't remember how old she was, but you know, in her mid-20s, and she's got three kids and she's pregnant and she has got no food to eat, no money. And they live in a squatter area not far away from here. I mean, you know, and people who live in situations like that, you know, already have a couple of kids and who can't even feed them, you know, should really use contraceptives to avoid that they get pregnant again. I mean, it doesn't make sense to have the kids come into a reality where they have to suffer from day one. And, you know, we should at least encourage this. How it will be scaled up in the context of the crisis. I mean, the poor and the big families are suffering the most here in the Philippines at this point in time, who are not registered with the government, who live in squatter areas. Unless there's somebody else helping them, they are really in big trouble. So it is difficult for me to predict. I mean, my personal philosophy is... let's all focus on starting with us as individuals and turning our life into a healing impact on the planet rather than a burden. Then even though we have overpopulation, it's the consumption patterns that we have as individuals. And it's mainly it's not the poor, it's the rich people that have the issue of overconsumption or a gigantic carbon footprint. And that in accumulation is the problem of the planet. That's why we have we are consuming more than the planet can regenerate, and we are adding massively to pollutants up there in the atmosphere that have a significant impact on the planet. So I personally propagate individual responsibility. And most people might say, oh, you know, I live a comfortable life. I don't really want to change the way I live. But do it in a way of celebrating the planet, celebrating life, and just take a couple of measures that can be easily done without you having to radically change your lifestyle. The philosophy and the realization that less might be more could be a very, very powerful path to look at global overpopulation and at the same time individual lifestyle choices. I mean, we have had many people say to us, hey, you know, your babies are so cute, they are so lovely, hey, you should have more babies. But I think for me, you know, our two kids plus the two older daughters from Mary Ann's previous marriage, that, you know, we have a big family, we have plenty, and less is more, but we have a very strong family, and I'm sure each one of our family members can not be a burden to the planet, but a healing impact in the future, because that's what we're working towards, and it doesn't require huge sacrifices. It can be celebrated as a choice of an eco-conscious, fun, and happy lifestyle in balance with our natural elements, the source of life.
Matthias, well, this is a fantastic place to bring it to a close, because I absolutely love what you said a few minutes ago, and I'm going to reiterate it for everybody. That you're teaching your kids to have a healing effect on the planet. And I think, you know, this is an area which parents that are listening, educators that are listening, anybody that's listening that has influence, that is in a position where they can consciously lead a community, a team, a workspace, or a family, can take heed of this, is that if we actually all focus on all of those people having a healing effect rather than a disturbing effect, if you like, the other way on the planet, then I think everybody is going to be so much better off. I know that you've been doing a number of, just to wrap up, I know you've been doing a number of collaborations and have been advising businesses on the environment and how to become, you know, more environmentally aware. And also you're playing with some pretty big players in terms of the whole ESG thing and everything like that. If somebody's got an idea or something like that, are you open for them connecting with you on LinkedIn and maybe, are you looking for opportunities at the moment or not really?
Sure, I'm always open. I have a lot of opportunities coming my way at the moment, and bring it on. There could be more opportunities. I'm definitely open for that. And find me on LinkedIn or Facebook, and feel free to drop me a line.
Great. Matthias, I want to thank you so much for being on the call today. And I look forward to seeing how this develops over the next months and years. And I look forward to all of us having a much stronger relationship with the environment. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mike. Good to talk to you. Cheers.